I really love to program, and I remember being like so frustrated at some point because my time was fragmented so much that I could not get anything done, right? Until the point where I asked myself this question, and that was really pivotal, I think, in my CTO growth career. She's like, what does the company need?
Hello, I'm Andreas. In this podcast episode, we talk with Johan Romfort, a seasoned CTO from France, currently living in Germany. He was the co-founder and CTO at Seismic before it was acquired by Hootsuite in 2012. Since then, he has been an investor in various startups and recently started conducting technical due diligence. Welcome to the show, Johan.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
You're welcome. So obviously, we are both interested in technical due diligence, and we're both doing it. And so it's very interesting to have a conversation on how you approach it and basically how you how deep you go in when you're doing technical due diligence. Maybe you can share a bit about that. What is your approach? What do you focus on, maybe?
Sure, yeah. So first, it depends on the stage, obviously, of the company, right? Of the target, as we say. If it's a seed tech due diligence, I will focus a lot on like the capability of the team to iterate fast, because one of the goals is to get closer to product market fit as fast as possible. So it's really about pace of execution at this point, making sure that there's no over engineering, which you see quite often at this stage, and make sure that product and engineering really work well together, right? Now, I do a lot of tech due diligence at Series A stage. So seed is like a very small portion of what I do. Series A gets, of course, more serious because like at this point, you have some good sides of product market fit, and you're trying to grow the company. So obviously, there's a lot of topics to be checked at this point. And I will focus mostly on like three different pillars, right? Like, so team is extremely important because that's what makes your company or break it. There I would look at like, are there any skill gaps? Is the CTO a good leader? And we can come back to what good leader is. Do they manage to balance different topics within the team? So team aspect very important. Do you have any strong hiring capabilities? Do you have any secret sauce to do that? Then I will focus on product, and I focus more and more on product actually lately, because from what I've seen, there's a lot of discrepancies sometimes between product and engineering. If the product process is broken, then most likely the engineering process will be broken as well at some point. So making sure that those two teams work well together. And last but not least, technology, right? Like with the usual list of suspects, like architecture, infrastructure, DevOps, disaster recovery, security, and so on. So that's kind of what I cover.
Cool. When you talk about a broken product process, of course, flowing over to the engineering team, what kind of signs do you see there? Like, when is the product process broken, and how do you kind of figure that out?
It's generally with the communication, right? Communication documentation are extremely important when it comes to like transferring product requirements to the engineering team. Sometimes you see product requirements that are not well defined, which means that the engineering team is going to make up something which has not been specified. And when it comes back to product is like, oh, but like we didn't ask for that, right? Making sure that there's no too much discrepancy between the two, that specs are correct, so there's not too much back and forth between engineering and product is, in my opinion, very important.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. And You also talked about being a good leader, obviously, what we see a lot, especially in early stages, is that the most seasoned developer becomes a CTO and is then expected to be a good leader. Like, how do you see the evolution there? Do you still think that's the case in most situations, or do you see like a change in how companies approach that?
So yeah, I see a lot of struggles. So I've been mentoring about 150 CTOs in the last 2 years. I'm a CTO in residence in many TechStars program, which is a worldwide accelerator. And you know, one of the patterns that I've seen is that moving from being an engineer and an individual contributor to a CTO has a lot of challenges, right? Like, most of CTOs are actually pretty good, technically speaking, but they're lacking some soft skills, right? Like, how do you build a team? How do you even hire people? How do you build trust with them? How do you deal with conflict resolution? All those things are, you know, it's pretty steep to get to that level. So you really need to see, like, I see that through the, you know, like, the role of mentoring is very important in there, of course, making sure that you surround yourself as a CTO with people who have done that before and who can help you to get to a better level and to handle like all those new topics that you never had to deal with before.
And do you believe that a CTO still needs to program? Is that something that you
heard? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think partially at an early stage, you know, like if it's a company at seed stage, having really good technical skill and being able to at least do like some PR reviews, right? Like at some point you won't have time to program anymore anyway. And that also is another, I think, part of the growth that is difficult for most CTOs because they love to program. Like, I really love to program. And I remember being like so frustrated at some point because my time was fragmented so much that I could not get anything done, right? Yeah. Until the point where I asked myself this question, and that was really pivotal, I think, in my CTO growth career. She's like, what does the company need, right? Like, that's really the question. Like, they don't need like another coder. Like, I'm not the best coder out there, but I know a lot about like how to build up like a good architecture and how to lead people. So you really need to be able to transition from that role where you're really hands-on to trust the team and that you hired actually to do that work and to give them, you know, the autonomy to do things.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's a challenge as well. Like, yeah, there are some people that are not up for it. Like, how do you see them progressing most of the time? Like, do they stay within the company? Do they leave? Like, what's your experience with the people that are not like the perfect CTOs? I mean, they're maybe the hacker, what you call hacker type CTOs in the beginning, like, and they don't manage to transform into that more senior CTO profile. Like, how do you see that evolving?
It really depends, but like, I've definitely seen CTO stepping down on their own, right? Like, sometimes not on their own as well, but mostly on their own because like they don't really like actually what the role of CTO entails, right? They like to be really hands-on, and like they have such difficulty to move from being hands-on to actually have this broader, more generalist view of things. And some of them will grow, right? Like painful growth. But if you, if you surround yourself with good people who can like, you know, advise you properly, that can definitely help to get there. If I look at myself when I was CTO, like, unfortunately, I didn't have any mentors. I think I had initially some good skills in like managing people because I've done that for many years before. So that was definitely a good advantage. But nevertheless, the growth is always very difficult.
Okay, cool. Maybe a bit back to the due diligence and how you prepare for that. Like, maybe from your side, like, do you do some research on companies before you dive in, or you just dive in straight ahead without a lot of information?
Yeah, of course, I will do some research. Also, I think what's very important is to know more about the investment thesis of the fund, right? Like, what are they looking to do with this company? Why do they inject money into it? What do they expect from it? So being able to align that with the audit, I think, is extremely important.
Do you ask them to prepare stuff up front? Like, is there anything like you have a checklist or is there anything that you ask them to send to you up front, or you just...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So my process is generally that I will do a bit of research. I will generally receive a few documents from the fund or from the company itself. Like, generally the deck is the first thing that I will receive. Then I do a kickoff with the CTO. I explain the process, and the process is pretty simple. Like, I send two documents. One is a list of documents that they have to put in the data room. And the other thing is data request document. So it's a pretty extensive document. Like, at series A, I think I'm at around like 45 pages of questions. So it's a bit painful. At the same time, I try to make that, you know, as useful as possible for the CTO. So a lot of time I get feedback that the document is actually very interesting to them because they discover like some things that they have not necessarily thought about. Mm-hmm. So I send this document, then they return this information and I do interviews. And for a Series A deal, I would spend around like 10 to 12 hours speaking with the team. So a good amount of it with the CTO. I generally spend like 3-4 hours with the CTO. Mm-hmm. I talk to the product people. I talk sometimes to design, to QA. And to engineers, and I try to pick engineers at different stage also of
the makes sense. Yeah, we do the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, we don't send the checklist up front because it's indeed sometimes very overwhelming. Of course, we have our own checklist behind the scenes. Like when we're doing the interviews, but we do it through interviews that we try to fill it up. And I hear indeed from a lot of companies that we audit or that I hear that the diligence done by another party, that the checklisting can be a bit overwhelming indeed in the beginning. Course, as an auditor, it's a lot easier, I guess, to do it like that than to try to figure everything out through interviews, especially also if you're doing it alone, because that's what you're doing, right? You're not doing it with a team like we're doing, so it's a lot easier, I guess, to gather all the information like that. Okay.
Yes.
Very cool. Maybe another interesting thing to discuss is at Seismic, you've been at the acquiring side as well. So you've done the diligence from a perspective of an acquirer.
Yes.
Is that different from doing it for a fund? Like, what kind of was like other focus points, or were you approaching it differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first point is that I didn't really know how to do it back then, right? Like, I was just a CTO. I didn't have a framework to conduct those due diligence. So it was a bit like ad hoc, so to speak. Looked a lot at the code, talked a lot to the founders. Generally, we acquired two companies in the life of Seismic. It was just like spending time with them, like trying to understand like what drives them, because of course, like they would be integrated into the team. We are very small companies anyway, and making sure that the technologies that they developed could fit into what we did as well. So it was really about like aligning those two perspectives.
Like the integration of the two companies. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Cool. And for VCs, like, I have a much more structured process, right? Like, and also I know way more now.
Of course. 15
years ago, than I did before. And of course, I've also been on the other side. Like, I've been, you know, audited as well when I was doing Seismic. So, My first due diligence actually was by the former CTO and co-founder of LinkedIn, which was a bit like stressful. But went really well, obviously. But I had no idea what to expect.
Is that something that you sometimes reflect to when you're doing the diligence now? Like that experience, like, do you think it helps you with doing the diligence today?
Not really, because I think it was very informal. Like, you see a lot of firms actually, asking CTOs of their portfolio companies.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
To do audits. And like, it's not really structured, right? So essentially what happened is that Eric Lee, his name, like, came to the office we spend like a day together, like whiteboarding and stuff, and like, you know, me explaining him about the architecture. There's a lot of things like retrospectively that he didn't ask me and like he should have probably. But he was more from like really a technical angle than anything else.
And that's what I see with a lot of funds as well, that indeed they just pick someone like a CTO from a portfolio company and they let them do the due diligence. But I also see very often that they miss things because indeed they don't have like a real process.
Absolutely.
For it. Yeah. Okay, absolutely. Cool. Okay, that's very cool. I mean, we're going to try to run it off. I have like one last question for you. And let's say I'm a company that is being confronted with a due diligence in the near future. Is like, is there like a last bit of advice that you can give me before I dive into
it? Sure, yeah. Well, first you could read my guide. So I wrote a guide about a year ago, which I think now it's time to update it a little bit. But I published this guide together with Circle CI. And it's basically like, you know, surviving guide for tech due diligence, right? So it covers like kind of like, you know, the different topics that you need to deal with, but also more like also the psychological aspects of the tech due diligence, like mm-hmm. how you should behave, things you should not do, like concealing information, for example, these kind of things.
Okay.
But cool. I think more importantly, like it's important to be prepared, right? I see a lot of CTOs that they don't know, because also to be fair, like there's not much information out there about like what a tech due diligence process is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not something that has been like tremendously standardized. So it's difficult. Like you'll find lists like the five things you should avoid during a tech due diligence, but that doesn't really give you so much insight. So that's why I wrote this guide to help founders.
Very cool. Yeah, you can find it on the Circle CI website, I think. And can download it there. Cool. Okay, then I'm going to thank you a lot for your time, and it was very nice having you on our show. Thank you for tuning in. You can find the transcript of this episode and links to your favorite podcast platforms on our website, madewithlove.com/pulse. Thanks again and have a good one.